welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that features the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Gail Seiler, and I'm here with my co-host, Max Ennis, a new member of the Local Talk team. Hello, Max.
Hello, Gail. Thank you for having me on.
It's great to have you here, and we're glad to have you as part of our team. Can you tell me a bit about yourself or tell the listener about yourself, Max?
Yeah, I'm a high school student at Ames High. I recently began recording a bit for Local Talk for community radio, and I'm looking to get involved even more with community radio.
And so we're going to hear this new segment in a little bit today. Mm-hmm. How did you hear about KHOI, and how did you get involved?
Well, I'm one of the leaders of the high school's garden club, and Don and Lana Kitchen invited us on to be guests on their show, and so I had never heard of KHOI before that, and then it just opened this world as like these two people have a voice, and it's in Ames, and they're on the radio, and that it just was a really cool experience, and it kind of whet my taste.
That's really interesting, and it shows how the KHOI family grows. We're a relatively new radio station, only 3 years old, and we expand by word of mouth, but also by being very welcoming to bring people in. So we're delighted to have you join us, and we hope you'll spread the word among high school students as well that we exist.
It's already happening.
Great. Well, it's particularly good that we have you to join us for this show today, because the theme of our show is young people in Central Iowa. We'll have three different segments, each of which will give us a different perspective about what young people are up to locally, what's important to them, and also some of the challenges they face. We'll hear several interviews that students at Ames High School did with relatives and other people in their lives. These were part of a project called Story County Stories. And later in the show, we'll hear the powerful story of a young woman raised in El Salvador who tells how she ended up at Grinnell College after living in Los Angeles. But first, we're going to start with your report, Max, the Teen Zone Report. This was produced by you and a co-host, who I'm going to ask you to tell us about. But first, what was your goal with this segment, and what did you want to accomplish with it?
I think the primary goal is to be funny, but we also want to be an informative news source, but something that puts a unique spin on things and makes local topics interesting to young people especially.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to hearing it. And can you tell us a bit about the person who co-produced it with you?
Yeah, the person I co-produced this bit with was Thea Brenner. She's also a high school student. We've been friends for a long time. We just have a ton of fun together, and we like to make a lot of jokes and just kind of – I think we're funny together. And so I told her about KHOI Radio. I said, hey, maybe we should get a show. And the idea kind of snowballed and turned into this.
And did either of you have any experience with radio, either on the technical side or the kind of on-air side, host side?
Not any formal radio experience, no.
Okay, so we're looking forward to hearing what you've come up with. So let's listen to this new segment, the Teen Zone Report.
It's sensationalized, it's uninformative, it's everything you want. You're listening to the Teen Zone Report on KHOI FM Community Radio.
Cutting
through the jungle with
the golden track. I don't really know. I guess my main thing is I just don't know what. So first of our Facebook page is how many likes do we have on our Facebook page?
Time for some breaking news.
Experts say that we are living in a social media bubble. This bubble is characterized by companies competing for attention and prestige on social media while ignoring the quality of the content they publish on social media. I, for one, am outraged at the lack of quality Walmart posts.
A social website called Cardio Exchange, directed towards cardiologists, shut down Wednesday after 5 years of operation due to dwindling membership and funding. An open heart surgeon says that he is glad that he can get back to having no life in real life.
ISIS is becoming more and more effective at recruiting teens on social media. Many ISIS recruiters are using Twitter to highlight flaws in American culture and government while glorifying their organization. It turns out kids don't want to complain about school and their parents exclusively. Western civilization is pretty unpopular, too.
More people are using Instagram than ever, and with 300 million users, more teens than ever imagined can now post a picture of them with their mother on Mother's Day that their mother will never see. Instagram has surpassed competitor site Twitter in the past year and continues to gain momentum. Twitter, whose mascot is a cartoon songbird, is still widely used by celebrities, politicians, and other notables. But the future of social media appears to belong to Instagram, whose icon is a Polaroid camera. Or to Lawn, anybody?
The fastest growing social media app in this atmosphere is Snapchat. 50% of people with smartphones in Norway use the app. So in other words, pictures of blonde people in fjords are being taken and deleted at levels previously unheard of. But in all actuality, the photo-based app is a very popular tool amongst people under the age of 30.
Country music star Justin Moore was dismayed when he lost his family's dog, Hank, a week ago. He took to his Facebook and Twitter to ask his fans to help him search for the dog. Within a day, he posted an update announcing that the dog had been found by two men. In other Florida news, two men rushed hurriedly into multiple pet shops looking to buy a small black terrier. You're listening to the Teen Zone Report with Max and Thea.
And now, for some human interest stories.
A local teen is considered by his parents to be the tech expert of the house due to his expenditure of 50% of his waking hours on social media. The 15-year-old boy's morning routine consists of him checking four different social media sites three times while showering and eating breakfast in between his updates, and continues at this pace throughout the day. His parents see his obsession with technology and assume that he's more knowledgeable than them when it comes to any form of computing devices. Unfortunately, this boy spends his time reading material that is not pertinent to technology or anything, really. He pretends to know what he is doing when his mother's computer breaks down to keep his parents from thinking that he is devoid of any useful skills, which he is. We know the truth, Brian.
A college student can't quite figure out why she has become increasingly lonely since last checking her Twitter. She last checked her Twitter in her dorm room at ISU 5 minutes ago and has since been filled with a geometrically increasing sense of dread. As she attempts to study, her thoughts shift towards her personal isolation and loneliness. Earlier in the semester, when she was in a similar situation, she tried to address her loneliness by conversing with her roommate. The roommate, who was checking a nearly identical feed, responded to the woman's attempt to converse enthusiastically and was distracted by her phone. When asked if she thought that social networking was the cause of her loneliness, she said, "Oh no, no, of course not. It helps me be connected to all the people in my life."
This just in, a grandmother has begun experimenting with alternative punctuation on their grandchild's Facebook posts. While the child is not extremely active on any form of social media, her grandmother does not hesitate to actively engage with any update the child posts. Earlier this year, she would structure her comments as letters. Just last week, she began replacing periods with ellipses in order to add eloquence and grace to her public correspondent with her third youngest grandchild. We are receiving reports of the elderly woman liberally using a semicolon, where clearly a comma is the appropriate choice. I guess it's sort of embarrassing. I mean, like, all my friends see that my grandma's semi-illiterate, but I just usually ignore anything she posts, so it's not too bad, the grandchild tells us. The grandmother is much more excited by her ability to interact with her grandchildren. I just love seeing what they are doing in their lives, and it's a level of correspondence I've never been able to reach with my grandkids. Their parents are clearly avoiding me, but I can still get through to the kids with my computer. Plus, the chance to express myself through unconventional grammar is a real refresher.
Yik Yak is a social networking site that is completely anonymous. On top of being anonymous, the posts you see are the ones in your area. People can comment on others' posts, all without revealing a shred of personal information.
And now, a reading from Local Yik Yak.
Who needs a girlfriend when you have one on The Sims?
I heard a rumor the other day. They say you are 99% more likely to find someone special if you leave your apartment. So I went back to my apartment to watch Netflix.
Pizza equals purple heart, purple heart, purple heart.
It's intolerant to be intolerant to intolerant people.
I'd like to thank Netflix, Budweiser, and Google. If it wasn't for them, this wouldn't have been possible.
Ants are slowly taking over campus. You were listening to the Teen Zone Report with Thea and Max. We are currently talking about social media. Now for a quick music break.
You like, try to get engagement with some photos from my life, my cat, my kids, some bacon. I'm hoping you'll share my stuff and tweet it to the world. If you help me grow my clouds, I promise that I'll share yours. So connect with me, let's have some fun. Show the world how this gets done. Let's get social with social media. Let's get social with social media. Where we can spread the word and grow our reach and find our fans in their newsfeed. Let's get social with social media. Searching for the story that'll bring us instant fame. So we shoot our viral video and we post it to the gram. We're looking for the secret of Facebook's holy grail. We try to keep from paying all that leads to hashtag fail. So connect with me, let's have some fun.
All right, everyone, I want you to stand up right now, take out your phones, take a selfie with your neighbor. It's time to get social. Hey now, y'all, can we just get real? Do we really care about our fans, or is this just another deal? Said another way, that we lost our way? Social's about the people, remember? We are people. Do we really need another like, fan, or share? Do we need another post to show up everywhere? I hope as we scatter that we never forget that our posts live forever, even when we go to bed.
So connect with me, let's have some fun, let's show the world out this game.
Social.
Let's get social.
You are listening to the Teen Zone Report with Max and Thea.
To really understand how social media is affecting our lives, I think it's important to start by asking the right questions. The conversation over social media is too often about how much time people are spending on social media, what the feedback from people they are connected to looks like, and the quality of one's content.
That's right. Social refers to a relation to a society. The assumption we've begun to fall into is when talking about social media affects us is that our real life society and our real society is that the two either aren't related at all, they're two separate worlds, or that they're completely identical, with social media being a text-based reflection of our material society.
Roughly 3 months ago, I deleted my Facebook, Snapchat, and Twitter. What I found as soon as I had rid myself of these applications was that I was thinking in captions. Whenever I did any sort of activity, I would instantly come up with a Twitter post or picture on Snapchat that people would find interesting. Social media has turned into an extension of the mind for many people who use it extensively. And with this altering of what social networks mean, the dangers and potential threats are heightened. Just as 10 seconds of fame is a known possibility with social media, so are 10 seconds of infamy. That's important to understand. While social media isn't something that is a pure reflection of our society, seeing as it generates its own trends and culture, it is something that has the ability to affect us in so many ways. Using the ISIS recruitment example from earlier, it's pretty clear that a lot of what happens on social media integrates itself with the real world.
That's why it's important to look at more information than just information that presents itself within the realm of social media, such as the number of likes, favorites, number of users, whatever the metric is that the site uses, in order for us to get a better understanding of how we deal with the ability to show great compassion, like in the case with Justin Moore's dog, and the ability to do terrible things, like running off and joining ISIS. We have to understand ourselves and social media, not just the latter.
Questions like, how does this post make me feel? How does social media affect how I treat others? And why do I use social media and what do I hope to get from it? Will help us talk about our networks in a way that isn't focused around metrics that are disconnected from meaning and allow us to be more socially responsible when we're using social media.
Social media is another technology that we need to ask ourselves questions about, not just its function, but how it affects our emotions and how our interactions online affect others. So with that being said, talk to each other. Put your phone away from time to time, and don't join ISIS.
That concludes our first episode of Teen Zone Report. Stay tuned to KHOI for more quality programming. We will return in August. If you have any questions or comments, we would love to hear them.
That was a new segment called Teen Zone Report. It was produced by Max Ennis and Thea Brenner, new members of our Local Talk team. Max is here with me in the studio today. Thanks very much for that, Max. It was great. It definitely has a unique style and sound that I think woke our listeners up and gave them something a little different this morning. So thanks to both of you.
Thank you. It's great to be on Local Talk for the first time. We're going to continue to bring you the voices of youth on today's show. Next, we'll be listening to interviews from the Story County Story Project. A few months back, Local Talk featured this project. Joe Brecky was on the show. He's the teacher at Ames High School who originated Story County Stories, and a few students who had been involved were also on the air, and we aired a few podcasts.
But there were almost 200 interview podcasts produced by the students this year, and we only played a small sample of them. So we are going to play a couple more of them today. After the podcasts were all completed, the students sorted them into categories according to their theme, and they're now posted on a website, which we'll have a link to. We're going to hear four of the podcasts today, two from the category of love and relationships, and two from the category military service. We think they're wonderful examples of young people learning from their elders, from the people who are most important to them, and we're delighted to bring them to you.
The first podcast we're going to listen to is a very funny story about how two people met, fell in love, and got married. Leah Smith interviews her mother, Gina Smith.
From Grandma, that there was an interesting way you met Dad, and I was wondering if you could tell me all about it.
Sure. It is that I think it is an interesting story. I shared it with a lot of people. I was working at the hospital in Des Moines, and so I didn't get a chance to meet a lot of people. Wasn't dating at the time, but I had a patient come in to cardiac rehab, and I was orienting him to the program, and he said, "Are you married? Do you like to dance?" I said, "No, I'm not married. Yes, I like to dance. I have a son about your age." I said, "I don't date patient sons, Bob." He says, "Oh, Harriet, don't you have a picture of Brian in your wallet?" And I said, "No, that's okay. I don't date patient sons." So they continued to tell me all the good things about Brian and stuff. Well, this is an appointment to get started in the program, and the program was 6 to 8 weeks. So every time, 3 times a week, Bob came to the program to exercise, he'd say, "Gina, won't you just let me get your phone number so I can have Brian call you for a date?" I said, "No, I don't date patient sons." This continued on and continued on. Well, then he had more heart problems, so then he had to have bypass surgery. Went in for bypass surgery, and your grandma, Harriet, was in the waiting room with some big, tall guys, and so I just happened to be walking by, and she's like, Gina, you have to come here. You have to meet these people. These are my sons." So there was Ellis, there was Tim, and your dad wasn't there. Oh, shoot, Brian's not here yet. So she had to introduce me to your uncles. But anyway, so I've got to meet them, and she's the lady that's been taking such good care of your father, she was telling them. So anyway, so then after bypass surgery, he had to come back for cardiac rehab. And once again, he started on me. I don't share my phone number. I don't date patient sons. So this continued on and till he was ready to finish the program, and it was Christmas time, and the weather was kind of bad. So he calls to tell me that he is coming to cardiac rehab that day. And I said, "Well, that's kind of strange. Why is he calling to tell me he is coming?" And he says, "Hold on a minute, Gina." And the next thing I know, there's a voice saying, "Hello, who is this?" And I said, "Hello, who is this?" "Well, this is Brian Smith." "Oh, this is Gina Smith. I think your dad's trying to set us up." So he says, "Oh, I'm sorry about that." He says, "Are you interested in just going out sometime?" And I'm like, "Sure, that'd be fine. I'll give your dad my phone numbers." So he came in for cardiac rehab and told him that wasn't very nice for him to ambush me that way. So I gave him my phone number, and he gave it to Brian, and Brian lost my phone number. Called up and he said, "Brian lost your phone number. Can I get your phone number again?" So he gave him my phone number again, and he called, and he wanted to go out New Year's Eve. And I thought that was a bad idea for a first date, because that's kind of a mandatory first kiss. So I said, "I didn't think so." So then he called again, and this time I had an allergic reaction to an antibiotic. I had an ear infection, and I had gotten a rash all over my body. So he had called to invite me out. We had it set up, and I had to call him back and say I couldn't go because I had this rash all over my body. And he told me afterwards, he's like, "I was going to try a third time, and if you said no, it was over." But he thought I was just making up excuses. The third time, he called, and we went out, and we had a great time, and we danced all night and felt like we'd known each other forever and talked about family. And he grew up on a farm and I grew up on a farm, and he had brothers and I had brothers, and we just had so much in common and had a great time. And 3 months later we were engaged, and a year later after that we got married.
What was your first impression of Dad?
Man, he's tall. Since he was 6'6".
Yeah. Where'd you go on your first date?
I think we went to this bar dance club thing that had had dancing and stuff there, Asian thing, and so they had a live band.
That was Gina Smith. She told that story with such enthusiasm. You could almost hear her reliving that time in her life. You're listening to KHOI Radio, and we're bringing you podcasts from the Story County Stories Project. These are podcasts made by Ames High School seniors this past year. In the next podcast, Aaron Lewis interviews his mother, Laura, who tells how she was a single mother and met Matthew, who is visually impaired, and how their relationship developed.
How did you meet Matt to begin with? I've never actually heard that story.
I and Matt met online, and we talked via email for a couple of weeks, and then we talked on the phone for a couple of weeks, and then we finally met in person. Kind of like a blind date, except not exactly a blind date, which is kind of ironic.
Yeah, I caught that.
I didn't intend that. But we just met for lunch one day after we'd been talking for a couple weeks, and I don't know, we just really hit it off. And there were just a lot of things that about our upbringing that were very similar. Dedication to family was important to both of us. And at the time, Grandpa had just been diagnosed with some more complications from his cancer. And so I kind of had to put Matt on the back burner for a little bit. Maybe that's a little strong. I couldn't spend as much time with him as maybe we wanted to, just because I was helping Grandma and Grandpa and, you know, taking care of you and stuff. It wasn't that we didn't talk at night, you know, on the phone and stuff. It's just that, you know, we didn't get to go out maybe and have dinner when we would have normally. I was spending that time with Grandma and Grandpa. I couldn't juggle everything. And so, you know, he was accommodating and he understood, and I don't know, it just, but he was still supportive. You know, it was just,
he understood he couldn't have the, he couldn't
yeah,
be the focus.
He got it. He got right. That my focus was where it needed to be. I don't know. The rest is kind of history. We've been together ever since.
That's such a touching story, and it's interesting that humor was key to both of those memories for both of those folks.
We're going to hear a little music now. We'll listen to Dale Boyle, a musician from Canada, doing his rendition of a Bruce Springsteen song.
I was 8 years old, running with a dime in my hand, to the bus stop to pick up a paper for my old man. And I'd sit on his lap in that big old Buick and steer as it drove through town. He'd toss on my hair and say, "Son, take a good look around. This is your hometown. Your hometown. This is your hometown. Your hometown." In 65, the tension's running high at my high school. Well, there were fights between black and whites. There was nothing at a light on a Saturday night. In the backseat there was a gun, and words were passed, a shotgun blast. Troubled times, they had come to my hometown, to my hometown, my hometown. Now Main Street's wide, wash windows and vacant stores. Seems like there ain't anybody.
nobody wants to come down here no more. Man is shutting down the textile mill across the railroad tracks. Farmer says his job's the going, boys, and well, they ain't coming back to your hometown. Last night, me and Kate away, laid in bed and talking about getting out and packing up our things and maybe heading on down south. Well, I'm 35 and I got a boy around now. Last night I sat him up behind a wheel. I said, son, take a good look around. This is your hometown. Your hometown. Your hometown. Your hometown.
That was a song called My Hometown, written by Bruce Springsteen and performed by Dale Boyle, who comes from a small town on the Gaspé Peninsula in Quebec. I got to know Dale when I was teaching in Montreal, Canada, and I'm a big Bruce Springsteen fan because I come from New Jersey originally. So I really like that combination of someone from rural Quebec performing a song written about Freehold, New Jersey. Two completely different worlds, but both do such a great job with the song.
Yeah. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Radio, Story City, Ames. We've got two more podcasts from the Story County Stories to hear. The next podcast was made by Michael Spencer Jr. In it, he interviews his father, Michael Spencer Sr., about his time in the United States Air Force.
Do you ever feel that one day when you're overseas, you might not come home?
Mm-hmm. Yep. A couple times.
Why was that?
Because we were getting missiles launched at us, and some of the information, one of the things that happened over there was a bombing of the USS Cole, and that happened, I think, in 98, and that's where they drove boats, small little boats, up to the side of the Navy boat and blew it up, and it killed, I can't remember how many people. Well, my job was to read all the message traffic, and I knew that that could happen about a year before it did because of the different threats that we were analyzing. So, yeah, it was a couple times it was pretty scary.
How you felt about being away from your family and friends?
How I felt. For a while, you don't have, I mean, you're very busy. So, I mean, it really wasn't a, it's hard to explain. Because I was working, you know, 16, 17 hours a day, every day, for 120 plus days straight. So you're constantly busy. But what we were doing was scary as well. Because I was, you know, trying to protect the base from bin Laden and terrorists and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, mom was pregnant with you. So I was really worried about her being by herself with your sister only being 3 years old and her being pregnant with you and by herself. So we tried to stay in contact as best we could. I was lucky that I had a private phone in my house so I could call, you know, pretty regularly. I wouldn't call every day because that wouldn't have been right, but I think I called probably 2 or 3 times a week to talk to her, so. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's You don't have time to be lonely or anything like that because you're busy all the time, but you just miss home.
And the last one we will play is by Jordan Newbanks, who interviewed his father, Kerry Newbanks, about his work in the National Guard for 22 years.
Well, I started in 1987 in just the Army National Guard, and I went to the military to get college money, to earn college money. And so basically 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year after my basic and advanced training is all I did for the military. But it was, you know, every weekend we trained like we were professional military training to go in war. And so they put you in adverse situations to try and get you to overcome those situations and complete the mission. One mission that I probably am most proud of is just, you know, the first time I earned an Army Achievement Medal. And it was just a training mission out in the National Training Center in the Mojave Desert out in California. And so we were tasked to be trainers or to help the trainers. National Training Center is a training center for all Army, not just Army National Guard. And so we were tasked to go out and help train a regular Army unit. And so one of our my missions that I was most proud of and I earned an award for was we basically, me and my squad, attacked an Army. It was out in the field, so they were all in tents, and they had their command post. That's what I'm thinking of. It was their command post. So me and 13 guys was my squad, and they had over 100 people there, and we attacked them. And I use the term killed, but we were playing laser tag, basically. So we basically killed 100 of them and 6 vehicles. Before they finally told us to stop, and we'd only suffered 2 losses.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's always been, you know, that was early on in my career when I first became a squad leader. So it was one of those things that was really, really proud of because, you know, I hadn't
had much leadership skills.
Right. I didn't think I had, you know, I hadn't been a leader for very long. And so to have that under my belt was really kickstarted my career.
You are listening to Local Talk on KHY Community Radio, Story City Ames, where we bring you the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. Today we are focusing on young people of the region. You just heard podcasts produced by students at Ames High School. And now we turn to Latino youth.
We're going to hear a story recounted by Yesenia, a young woman who was in KHOI's studio this past week. She is a facilitator in a summer program for Latino youth. The program is called El Éxito, and on Wednesday, she brought a number of high school students from Des Moines into the studio to record stories that they had written. They all decided to use only their first names, so that's why we're referring to this speaker as Yesenia. We'll broadcast some of these high school students' stories on Local Talk next Friday. But while she was in the studio, Yesenia recorded her own story. And as she did so, she was talking directly to the young people who came with her. She wanted to share her story with them, and now we are sharing it with you. Yesenia just sat down and told this story, unwritten and spontaneous, and I think you'll find it very moving.
So both of my parents are from El Salvador. I was born in the United States, but raised in El Salvador. At about age 10, my parents decided that a better future for me would be here. So they left their families, they left their jobs to come to the United States. They settled in Los Angeles, California. There I grew up taking care of my siblings, dropping them off from school in the morning, and taking the role of a second mother for them. Because I would cook, clean, and go to school. As the years went by, my family never really had hopes of me going to college. They always believed that I would go to the community college around the house, like really close to the house. That way I can help provide for the family and at the same time try to get a college education. Growing up, that idea started fading away. At the age of 16, I started working at McDonald's, sweeping and mopping as a cashier. Feeling and experiencing what my mom went through, being yelled at, being humiliated by those managers, really made me open my eyes about what she was living. So I knew I wanted to do something different. Every single time I had a shift, I knew that I wanted to do well in school so this would not be the rest of my life. When I turned 18, they promoted me into management. Not even 2 months later, my boss saw potential, and even she was very flexible with my schooling and promoted me to department management. That was my opportunity to help those people. I would do their schedules. I would hire, and I would be taking care of them as the people department manager. But I knew I wanted something better for myself. I didn't want to go to school from 8 a.m. all the way to 3 and work from 4 all the way to midnight, sometimes 1 a.m. Then go and do homework. And the next day be so exhausted in class, but yet still trying because I wanted to get out of the cycle that I was living. I was a straight-A student. It wasn't easy, but I knew that one day it would pay off. My English teacher was supporting me my whole 4 years. Then senior year came. I had to decide what I wanted to do with my life. So my English teacher comes up to me and says, Yesenia, you have over a 4.0 GPA. You're doing all these great things within your community, even on your days off from work. Why don't you apply for something called a Posse Scholarship? I was like, what is that? He's like, it's a national scholarship that helps students go to out-of-state schools with a full-ride tuition. I remember that day telling, Mr. Malarkey, you're funny. Why would I get that? Over 2,100 students from LA applied for the scholarship, so I knew my chances were minimal. It was 3 rounds, so you would have to pass every round in order to continue even being eligible for the scholarship. I remember having to hide the whole process from my parents. I briefly had mentioned to them, Mom, there's this out-of-state scholarship that I can maybe get. And her looking at me with anger in her face telling me, what are you thinking of doing? You're not going to leave. You have to stay here. You're making enough money to help us out in the household. Are you crazy? Stop thinking about that and go wash the dishes. She briefly mentioned it to my dad that same night. And he came and talked to me and said, I don't ever want you repeating that again. You're staying in the household until you get married. So I completely ignored them and just started crying in my room. The next day I go to school and I tell him, I'm not interested. I don't want to do the scholarship. I'm sorry. He says, why? I can't. I didn't have a response. I couldn't tell him it was my parents because I would feel dumb. But then I had to tell him because he was like pressuring me into applying for the scholarship. So afterwards, I had to do the whole application process hiding from my parents. I had one of my closest tia, my aunt, De Ivania. She was in the emergency contact list from my school, so I was like, she's a perfect one to take me out of school early and take me to these events that I have to go to for the scholarship. So I did. So she took me to every event, and I made it to the second round, to the third round, and then I had made it to the finalist round. All my teachers were excited, my counselors, those people are supporting me at school. But it was time for my parents to sign documents and for them to know. So I go home and I tell both of my parents, I apply for the scholarship behind your back, but I'm telling you this now because I'm a finalist. They walked away, ignored me. 3 weeks passed, my parents wouldn't talk to me. They would not even dare to look at me in the eyes. And I remember my dad telling me, if you leave the house, you're going to fail, and you're going to fail by yourself because there's not going to be any of us there to support you. At that moment, I just wanted to prove him wrong. I wanted to tell him what college education meant for me. I wanted to develop as an individual. I wanted to explore the world, and they weren't letting me. So then, I did it. My mom, at the end, started giving in and she started signing papers because she said, do whatever you want. Coming to Grinnell College was a dream for me. I remember the night of the finalist round, I knew that's where I wanted to be. I knew that's the student I wanted to be. I wanted to go to a different community. I wanted to experience what it meant to be surrounded by all this diversity. Because I was surrounded among Latinos my whole life, so I did not know what diversity meant. I didn't know about all these cool topics that they talked about in school. I couldn't have those conversations in my neighborhood. I wanted to go somewhere to explore. So then, I remember myself during lunchtime in Mr. Dixon's class, my sociology teacher at the time. And I get a call from 213. And I'm like, this is a number I don't recognize. I'm not going to answer. But then, through my thoughts, Posse came up. And I was like, the scholarship. And I answered. And I hear a lot of people saying congratulations on the other side of the phone. I remember my body. I froze. I was shaking. Was it really me? Am I really going to Iowa for college? Is this really happening? What am I going to tell my parents? Should I tell them? It was the most exciting moment of my life. The chills that ran through my body that day, knowing that I, this minority student, low income, was rewarded with an over $200,000 scholarship to attend this private institution. It was a dream. But then I decided that I was going to do it. So I left. I cried the first week here at Grinnell. I'm not going to lie to you. I cried. I miss my family. And I literally, the thoughts that went through my mind was, my dad was right. I'm only here to fail. All these people are way smarter than I am. But then I had my mentor with me, which she provided a lot of support for me. And I remember her telling me, there's an organization called El Éxito. And I was like, oh, what's that? I researched it. We had a whole conversation about it. And I knew that it was a dream that I had to work with the Latino families here in Iowa. So I got together with Don, the executive director of the program, and we started sketching workshops for parents. We wanted parent support. And I was like, yes, this is what I want to do, and that's what she wanted to do. So afterwards, we were able to apply for funding everywhere we could. From the college, I ended up getting something called a Student Engagement Award, which was money for community involvement. SGA, which is the Student Government Association of the college, also supported us. So I got together a lot of Latinos from my school. And I said, look, this is what I want to do. I remember perfectly one of them telling me, you're crazy, but we'll do it. So along with El Éxito, we traveled to 7 sites all over Iowa. We informed parents about the U.S. education system. We informed them about the college application process, what a FAFSA was, financial aid opportunities. And we had a group designated to work with essay writing. Things that I always dreamt my parents found out about. Because until this day, they're confused, but it's not their fault. All those words that they told me that really hurt me before coming, I knew they weren't out of heart. It was that anger, that sadness they felt when they left their native country to find a better opportunity here in the United States. And I can say the story is repeating itself because I came to Iowa to find a better opportunity for myself. I knew that through an education, yeah, maybe there is extra loans there because I have to pay, you know, for the rest of the expenses. But it's an investment for my education. It's an investment for my future because I know that's something that no one will ever be able to take away from me. And working with this group this summer, wow, I thought I knew what it meant to be a Latina. Yeah, a Latina in LA, being surrounded by Latinos the whole time. But after knowing about all these people from all these communities, knowing your stories, my mind opened to a whole new world. A world of inspiration, of motivation to continue being here and wanting to be here. Because one thing I tell all of you, every single time when I work with El Éxito, I learn from them. I learn from you. You all might be younger than me, but I'm learning. And I'm still going through that journey that I know a lot of you are going through, maybe in high school. But trust me, that journey will continue for the rest of your life.
You're listening to KHOI Radio. That was Yesenia, a youth leader for an organization called El Éxito, which supports and mentors Latino youth throughout central Iowa. On Local Talk next Friday, we'll air more stories from the youth at El Éxito.
During the presidential election season, we will try to provide listings of candidate appearances in our area. So if you want to see and hear any of the candidates, here's where they will be. John Kasich will be at the Iowa Historical Society in Des Moines on Wednesday the 24th at 11:30. Ted Cruz will be in Red Oak, Council Bluffs, Johnston, and Denison over the next few days, but not in our area. If you want information on those events, you can find it on the website Governing Under the Influence, and we'll have a link for that on our website.
And the next big appearance in the Ames area will be Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Bobby Jindal, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, and Ben Carson at the 4th Annual Family Leadership Summit at Stevens Auditorium in Ames on Saturday, July 18th.
Finally, we have the live music listings for this week, courtesy of Belinda Merritt.
Hello, this is Belinda Merritt, and I have the live music for June 19th through the 25th. On Friday, June 19th, Jason Brown will be at Ames on the Half Shell, held at Durham Banshell Park, 6th Street and Duff Avenue, from 5 until 8 o'clock p.m. J. Clyde Band will be at Main Street Bike Night on Douglas Avenue between Main Street and 5th Street, from 5 until 9 o'clock p.m. Boomerang will be at Snooze Hill Winery, 2183 320th Street, Madrid, from 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Vinyl Vagabonds will be at The Bar, 823 Wheeler Street. On Sunday, June 21st, According to Hoyle, will be at Snooze Hill Winery, 2183 320th Street, Madrid, from 2 until 5 o'clock p.m. The Colt Walkers will be at Prairie Moon Winery, 3801 West 190th Street, from 3 until 6 o'clock p.m. Dr. Murdoch will be at Roosevelt School Summer Sundays, 912 9th Street, from 7 until 8:30 p.m. Bull Black Nova and Basin will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. On Monday, June 22nd, Great Lake Swimmers with the Weather Station will be at Blue Stem, which was formerly Zeke's, 2219 Lincoln Way, at 8 until 11 o'clock p.m. All ages are welcome, and tickets are available at eventbrite.com. The match sellers will be at DG's Tap, 125 Main Street. On Thursday, June 25th, Modern Era, Kickstart the Sun, and Cold Crash will be at DG's Tap, 125 Main Street. That's all I have for this week. Thank you.
Thanks to Belinda for keeping us updated on the music scene. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts, Gail Seiler and Max Ennis. We heard a segment called Teen Zone Report, co-produced by Max Ennis and Thea Brenner, the newest members of our Local Talk team. We also heard several more Story County stories produced by seniors at Ames High School. And we heard from a youth leader of an organization called El Exito, serving Latino youth in Iowa.
If you like the show, tell your friends or tweet about us. A podcast of the show, along with resource and contact information, will be available on our website at khoifm.org later today, at khoifm.org. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team, please call 292-2878 or stop by the studio at 410 Douglas Avenue.
Your role as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening and contributing, and we'll see you again on the radio.